Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
From another chilly weekend, but it's very sunny and in the upper 70s here in South Carolina. So anyone in the I'm your host, Mostest Radio Chick Annie, and unfortunately my co-host Mike is not with me today. Maybe he'll join a little bit later on, but he is doing his duty. He sued to see a Van Wass Michigan violation of the law, and the judge has him in court today. So I don't know if it's a trial motion or if it's a trial, but cool Mike in court fighting for his rights up in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So congratulations, cool Mike. We've got ourselves an exciting show, an exciting guest. Okay, sorry about that, but Skype just kicked me off, so I had to move real fast. But as I was starting to say, we've got a great show coming in. We've got Kevin Shipp, former CIA operative, and he's got a book out there called From the Company of Shadows, and we'll be talking to him about quarter after the hour. Want to welcome everyone in the chat room. See friends of ours just piling up in there, and letting you know Cool Mike is not with me. Hopefully he'll join a little bit later on after he gets out of court. Anyone that listens to the show knows that we start off with a dedication to a fallen hero. And this came across my desk, and it's going to be in two parts. And I'm going to try to get through it without bawling my eyes out. But today's dedication is going out to 8-year-old Miles Eckert's father, Army Sergeant Gary Andy Eckert, who was killed May 8, 2005, near Balud, Iraq, just a matter of weeks after Miles was born. And this goes from the blade. Purple Heart Hero touches many lives. With recordings of his wife's messages ringing love and hope throughout the sanctuary of the Calvary Assembly of God's Church, photo after photo of a smiling Gary Andy Eckert flashed on the screens yesterday behind his flag-draped coffin. There were photos of the Army Reserve Sergeant with his friends, photos with his wife Tiffany, photos of him holding his daughter, not quite 2 years old, and his newborn son. There were photos of Sergeant Eckert in uniform, serving alongside his fellow soldiers in Iraq, where he was killed May 8th near Beirut after an explosive detonated near his vehicle. Sergeant Eckert, 24, was the first member of the U.S. Army Reserve's 983rd Engineer Battalion in Monclova Township, killed in action since World War II. It was his second tour overseas. The first one ended after he sustained injuries, which he received a Purple Heart. Crowded into the church with the flag at half-staff outside, nearly 650 people gathered yesterday, with tear-stained cheeks and wrists adorned with red bracelets proclaiming courage to say goodbye. Andy didn't have to go to war. He came back a Purple Heart recipient, said Brigadier General Michael Beasley, commander of the Army's 88th Regional Readiness Command. He wanted to go back to serve our nation with our soldiers. He served after the birth of his daughter, Marley Freedom. He served knowing his son, Miles Manning, was on the way, General Beasley said. He was a wonderful soldier and a brilliant patriot. He was someone who taught us a whole lot about wearing a uniform, about being a father, about being a husband, about being an American. The two-hour church ceremony was a tribute to the young man's short but full life. Family and friends spoke of his love of sports and his competitive nature. They recalled times when, although a huge University of Michigan fan, he spent afternoons cheering for the Ohio State Buckeyes with his friends. They also spoke of the love story that evolved when he met his wife. The two were married 4 days after he was called to active duty on February 4th, 2003. I was going to write a letter, but I couldn't find the words. But Andy taught me that actions speak louder than words. The biggest action he ever showed me was love, Mrs. Eckert said. Because God gave Andy to me, I know what it is to be cherished. Sergeant Eckert grew up in White House and graduated from Anthony Wayne High School in 2000. His body was interred with a military ceremony at White House Cemetery, complete with a gun salute and a flyover by an air ambulance helicopter. Members of the 983rd Battalion who have not deployed or are home on leave honored their fellow soldier with a salute. Members of their families were each given a Gerber daisy. Andy and Tiffany's flower took place on his coffin, said Jackie Kidd-Lutzman, family program coordinator for the battalion. Mrs. Kidd-Lutzman said it was touches such as flowers, the bracelets, and the red, white, and blue magnets proclaiming freedom isn't free that were attached to vehicles in procession to the ceremony that Mrs. Eckert requested to make her husband's funeral special. Members and family of the 983rd soldiers all wore pink, she said, to celebrate with Andy and Tiffany's color. He was the only guy who could wear pink and still look macho, said Mrs. Kidd-Lutzman. He was a very, very special young man. Sergeant Eckert's military experience began March 6, 2003, when he left for training. He arrived in Iraq on May 19, 2003. He was originally with the 983rd Battalion, but transferred for a time to the 244th Engineering Battalion based in Fort Collins, Colorado. It was when the 983rd was mobilized in the summer of 2004 that Sergeant Eckert decided to return to Iraq with his battalion. Sergeant Eckert was awarded several medals for his service, among them the Bronze Star for Valor and his second Purple Heart, this time for giving his life to his country. This has been a very, very sad time, but we're also very proud of Andy. It's incredible what he accomplished in his life, said Brett Howland, a close friend, who said he thought of the young soldier as a son. We're never going to let his children forget who their daddy was. That's the goal from now on, to keep the spirit of Andy alive, the spirit of Andy Eckert. Andy Eckert gave his life in 2005. and this recently played in CBS News. And remember, the last thing that they wanted was that they were never going to let his children forget who their daddy was. CBS News.
Our final story begins with a chance encounter between an officer and a gentle young soul. Steve Hartman met them on the road.
Here at the Ohio Air National Guard Base near Toledo.
This is the 180th Fighter Wing.
Lieutenant Colonel Frank Daly still can't believe the honor recently bestowed upon him.
It's incredible being recognized in such a manner.
It happened at a Cracker Barrel, of all places. As the security camera shows, Lieutenant Colonel Daly entered the restaurant on February 7th for an early lunch. At about the same time, 8-year-old Miles Eckert came in with his family. Miles, in the green hoodie, was very excited. He just found a $20 bill in the parking lot.
Just sitting there?
Yeah.
Did you start thinking of what you could spend it on?
I kind of wanted to get a video game, but then I decided not to.
He changed his mind when he saw that guy in uniform.
Because he was a soldier, and soldiers remind me of my dad.
And so, with his dad in mind, Miles wrapped the 20 in a note that read, "Dear soldier, my dad was a soldier. He's in heaven now. I found this $20 in the parking lot when we got here. We like to pay it forward in my family. It's your lucky day. Thank you for your service." Signed, Miles Eckert, a Gold Star kid. Army Sergeant Andy Eckert was killed in Iraq just 5 weeks after Miles was born. All the kid has ever had are pictures and dog tags.
This is his wedding ring.
Other people's memories and his own imagination.
I imagine him as a really nice person and somebody that would be really fun.
The dad he imagines must also love a good story.
Yeah.
Because after lunch that day, Miles asked his mom, Tiffany, to make one more stop.
Excellent. He wanted to go see his dad. And he wanted to go by himself that day.
She took this picture from the car. Follow the footsteps and you'll see Miles standing there behind the flag, presumably telling his dad all about it. And whether heaven heard him or not, his good deed continues to impress here on earth.
You've read it more than once?
I look at it every day.
Kid gave you a bigger gift than $20.
A lifetime direction, for sure.
Lieutenant Colonel Daly says he's already given away the 20 and plans to do much more. He also hopes that little green post-it will inspire other people across the country to give as sincerely and dutifully as this father and son. Steve Hartman, on the road, in Toledo, Ohio.
If you look at the video.
And that's the CBS Evening News for tonight. For all of us at CBS News all around the world, I'm Scott Pelley in Los Angeles. I'll see you Sunday on 60 Minutes. Good night.
If you look at the video above the description of the show and you look at the pictures, you'll see a picture of Miles hugging his dad's tombstone. So to Miles, to his father, to all the men and women who have served, who are serving and who will serve, not just in the military, but also first responders, the police officers, the firefighters, the EMS. God bless them all, and we dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon. Please visit his website, Todd Allen Herndon, and download it for free and catch it on YouTube.
Of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America, don't tread on me. I cannot be broken, I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames, and I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. America is my name. For those who need me, I'll always be here. For those who will harm me, I'll face without
again. Go to toddallenherndon.com and download it for free. We've got an exciting guest on, and fellow Tea Partier, former CIA operative and author, expose author, I should say, Kevin Shipp. Good afternoon, Kevin. How are you today?
Hi, Annie. Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I know you and I have been playing musical emails back and forth for a while, and I got the book in front of me that you autographed, For the Love of Freedom, and oh, yes, absolutely. You know, and I enjoyed reading the book, and it was funny because I've been trying to get you on the show, and like I said, we've been playing email tag, and
yeah.
I had a, actually, I went, when I went to put everything together for the interview, I went to the bookshelf, and I says, I know I read it, I know I put it up on the shelf, and I keep my books by genre. Well, I've happened to have a cat, I think that may be part of the Obama administration, and I had to tear
the book. There's a few of those.
Yeah, I had to tear the bookcase apart. I found it. It fell behind a row of books. And now you got to understand, this bookcase is 10 feet long and 8 feet high. So I'm going shelf by shelf until I found your book.
Good.
So I had a... And I read little enough that you and I kind of almost crossed paths when Bill Casey passed away.
Is that right? How was that?
Well, at the time, I was living in Westbury, and I was a New York City police officer. And we had been called up in reserves because the funeral was coming through, and first you stopped in Roslyn, and then you went to Holyrood.
Right.
I was confirmed at St. Bridget's. I was married to my first husband in St. Bridget's. My grandparents are buried in Holyrood. And across the street from the parking lot of St. Bridget's is a row of stores. There's a sporting goods store. There was a travel agency and a flower shop and a doctor's office, Dr. Napolitano. I was a travel agency back in the late 70s, early 80s. I was directly the cemetery.
No kidding, small world.
Yeah, and then when I married my second husband, we lived across the street from the church. I just couldn't get away from it.
Yeah, that was a really, really intensive, interesting event. The funeral, as you probably read in the papers, it was quite out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was. And it's funny because I don't know if you know Mike Cutler. He was former INS agent, and he did a lot of testifying before Congress about the INS, and he also has his own radio show. And little did I know that he and I ran across each other working in Brooklyn. So it's like, it's funny how it's like a small world.
It sure is. And I think, excuse me, I didn't mean to interject there, but if you read the book, I really gave some credit to the New York Police Department, really performed professionally during Casey's funeral. I think we had about an 80-car parade of limousines with government officials, cabinet-level officials, and let me tell you, the New York police were just outstanding.
Yeah, as I remember that day, we went only as far as the Cross Island. No, we went as far as the Clearview Expressway because they had bus in and they had us, you know, standing at all the ramps to block traffic because with the bus, you can't go on the parkway. So I remember that day very well. And that was an impressive motorcade, very impressive.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And you put that all together?
Well, there's a funny story behind that, too. Yes, we had a bunch of little CIA protective agents, and we had to put together all of the routes. We had to put together all the security checkpoints. Now, since President Reagan was there, we worked together with the Secret Service, and then after the ceremony at the church, he broke off, and then the rest of the 80-car limousine was just on us. So we just had the DCI security staff to cover the rest of the event, including in the cemetery.
Wow. And that was a cute little town, Westbury, though. Did you stay in Westbury?
Well, we actually stayed out at the director's residence. Even though he had passed away, believe it or not, he was still getting death threats, and there were some people threatening to throw calf's blood on a cactus, and he was still getting threats even though he had gone on to the next life. So we stayed in his residence.
Oh, all right. Because it is a cute little town. They've really fixed it up lately. So if you ever go back, go to Westbury, my old stomping grounds, as we call it, Westbury High. Now, your book, From the Company of Shadows, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, From the Company of Shadows was a passionate endeavor. It took me a good 2 years of going back and forth with the CIA to get that information out. And, of course, it was quite a battle. And you'll see as you read through the book some of the information that they blacked out. And what I did was I just left the blackouts in there so people could see what they had redacted. And we were able to get a significant amount of information through, including the story of the director's funeral there's kind of a funny story behind that in the book. And then the final chapter, chapter 26, was completely blacked out. And that's where the battle was because there's nothing classified at all in that chapter. But it does reveal a pretty significant case of CIA negligence where a wife and her three children were made very seriously ill. And that entire part, the rest of the book about CIA operations, how we recruited agents, we got that through. But when you get to chapter 26, about this little family that was injured, they blacked that whole thing out, and none of it was classified.
Yeah, well, we'll get that to the shadow code a little bit later on. I was sending out some teasers up on the internet earlier about the shadow code, and I've got the – matter of fact, I downloaded and printed the pages on your website about the shadow code. So that way, if anything ever happens, I've got my neat desk here. I can always upload it again, and I'm sure you've done the same thing.
Yeah, if I disappear in the night, then at least you'll have that.
Because knowing bureaucracy the way you and I know it, we know there's the old saying, it's CYA, cover your assets and do it in paper.
You got it. You know, that's unfortunately true. We're essentially we have a post-constitutional government, and as we've all seen so much recently, you just can't trust them, and you can't put anything past them, and they have taken the abuse of power to a whole new level.
That they have. You've got the CIA intrusion. You've got the NSA. You've got the IRS. And you go to the alphabet soup, and they're in every single aspect of our lives.
Yeah, we no longer live private lives, and as I was alluding to, we no longer live constitutional lives. Everything we do, everything we say is recorded, monitored, and logged away, of course, in the huge NSA Utah data center to the tune of 1.7 billion pieces of our personal information a day that's stored there indefinitely for their quote-unquote later use, whatever they decide that will be.
Yeah, and I do have a little fun with the radio show, kind of like tweaking them, because sometimes you'll use some of the code words you know they're looking for.
Yeah,
Well, maybe that's why my website went down a few times. Yeah, thanks.
Well, I can tell you, Annie, while I was writing From the Company of Shadows, my computer crashed once, and then when I was working on the final draft, and we had two computers working at the same time, not connected, both of those computers crashed, and then we'd get prompts that came up and said, there's a third party logged into your computer, which I'd never seen on this thing before, and it was things like that over and over, not to mention the veiled threats that if you publish this, it's going to be your hide, and we went through 2 years of pretty stressful 2 years in just getting that thing out.
Now, that I can believe, because last year we had the congressional seat that opened up when Tim Scott went and became a senator, and I had the honor of introducing Mark Sanford to a crowd up in Somerville, South Carolina here, and it was something that was spur of the moment. I just went there, you know, just to be part of the crowd and give a little support, and the next thing I know, I'm dragged up to introduce him. And, of course, I got TV cameras and everything thrown in my face, not a stitch of makeup on. That does for a woman's ego.
And Murphy's Law, yeah.
By the time I got home, I found that the Tea Party website had gone down. My show page had gone down. My emails,
yep.
I had to go and change all the passwords and everything. It was a nightmare. So, and you had to do this for 2 years. I can't imagine having to go through this for 2 years.
Oh, I tell you, Annie, if you ever get a chance to meet my wife, who has been my biggest supporter, she's new to all this, and she witnessed all this happening, and she cannot believe the number of times I was interrupted in trying to write this book. And it's all legal. It's all above board. There's nothing in it classified. I wrote it to get it through them. Now, they tried to black out some things about CIA operations that they couldn't justify, and that's where the battle was. We eventually won those battles. But after contacting a congressman, a senator, citing executive orders saying that they can't black certain things out. Anyway, my poor wife had to watch all this happening. The computer is going down, third-party logons, and on and on and on. So if you ever get a chance to meet her, she'll tell you her story, and she's never seen anything like it.
Yeah. Now, I've got your website up in the on the show page, and I'm going to put it up right now as we're talking, which
okay.
is, let me make sure I'm doing this right, www.kevin. M.
Yes,
Ship.
Yes, Kevin M. M as in Michael, yes, kevinmship.com.
All right, it's up in the chat room also, so anyone wants to go in the chat room, they can click on it and get your book. You're also up on Twitter, and I believe you're
That's
also right. on Facebook?
That's correct. Now, and for your listeners, Annie, if you go to Amazon or if you go to the author webpage, and the author webpage has some interesting things on it, but I will give you my personal email, and if there is anybody interested in the book is more of a mission than it is a profession. If they'll contact you, I'll get them the book at what I call the Tea Party price, and a good $10 cheaper than you're going to find it without shipping out there. So if they won't mind going through you, and if you don't mind, you can email me, and we can do it that way, and they don't have to pay the full publisher price or the price on the author website.
All right, what I'm putting up also then is in the chat room. I did that all wrong. Let me just – oh, of course, fingers are backwards. I am having a blog moment. I put a www in front of an email address. Email, if they want to email me directly, they can go to southernsense@hotmail.com. Otherwise, they can contact me through my website, which is southernsense.webs, webs.com. Both are up in the chat room. They're also up on my show page, so they can contact me either way, and I'll be happy
Good.
To put it on to you. And now, chapter
Good.
26, you said, was heavily, heavily redacted. And
yes.
actually, when I put the book up on the shelf, I saw the chapter 26, and I saw what you wrote about it on your website. I said, all right, I don't have time to do this right now because I was in a couple of different other projects. I put it on the shelf and said, I'll look at it later. So Sunday, when I was speed reading through your book, I hit chapter 26 again, and I go, oh, my God, I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I went up on the Internet and I said, can anyone do this? I was asking anyone, can they decipher the code you hid in Chapter 26?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that.
Well, in Chapter 26, obviously they use what's called the little-known state secrets privilege, and hopefully it's well-known now. But the state secrets privilege was created to protect legitimate missile secrets and satellite imagery secrets and things that are legitimately classified for real national security. Now, they throw that word around pretty loosely, but it was not created to block, blackout, and seal a personal injury case against American citizens who don't even work for the government. Her wife and her three children were made very badly, and they're still suffering from it today. So after I wrote the book, I did some soul searching, and I decided, no, they're not going to get away with this. This is unconstitutional, and it's illegal. So what I did was very carefully wove a code through the book, and the idea was to leave that to my kids and wife as a legacy, so someday after I check out of here, they'll have a code that reveals the injustice that was done to them by the government and the abuse of secrecy. But since my kids are still suffering, primarily my oldest son, and they were begging me to release it, I finally decided, just in the interest of freedom, I'll do it, taking a significant personal risk. I don't know if an agency officer has ever done this before, but I wove the quote in there and then put it on my website. And of course, as I sign in the books, it's for the love of freedom, and I'm taking a significant risk in doing it, but I think it's the right thing to do.
So basically, you turned around and put the thumb in the eye.
Yeah, and I ran it through them. I had to get every single word and every line censored. And of course, they censored things they legally could not do. So I put the code in there, ran the code through them, and they completely missed it. And we published the book with it in there with their approval. And that was pretty much the final say on the matter.
So they can't turn around and say, well, we didn't want you to. It's too late now. You let it go through.
Yeah, let it go through. And real quickly, I'll tell you how I did it. They would send me letters, and I have these, and they're unclassified, stating that you can't let anybody see this manuscript, including a publisher. That would include an editor. That would include anybody that's going to help you work on getting this book out. So it's a catch-22 that they use, and they know that. They use it well. So a lot of publishers won't even touch a CIA book because they know Valerie Plame had to go through the same thing. They know that it's just going to be a nightmare of having to go back and forth, and the CIA will tell you what you can publish, and they'll tell you what you can't. And you can't share that information with anybody until the CIA says, okay, this is the final publish-ready copy. You can now share it with a publisher. Well, that's a catch-22 situation. How is an author going to write a detailed book like this without a publisher and without an editor and without anyone else looking at the book and helping with formatting and everything else? So what I did after a bit of research is I formed Ascent Publications LLC and formed my own publishing company. So when they were communicating with me, and it's, of course, all legal and above board, when they're communicating with me, they were essentially communicating with the publisher. So when I got the final approval, bang, we had that thing out in about 2 weeks because I was the publisher and I published it. And by that time, it was on the street and it was a done deal.
Very clever. It's like chess moves. You have to think about 4 or 5 steps ahead of them.
It was a very long and large chess game with threats thrown in by them.
Yeah, and actually, you know, it's a very, very easy and fast read. And, you know, you lay out the details in layman's terms, you know, so it's some books you get, you know, former government officials or technicians, and you have to stop and then sit back and reread the sentence a few times to understand what they're trying to say. And then you have to then go to an encyclopedia or see, yours doesn't do that. You know, you just...
That's right. And I appreciate you saying that because that was intentional. I've read even some other books by some CI officers that were so technical, you make it halfway through and you're like, gosh, I just can't stand this anymore. So I intentionally wrote it in such a way that hopefully, God willing, people who read it, it will be at all of our levels so they can read it and understand it clearly and maybe be a little more interesting if it's not so doggone technical.
Yeah, because that's one things I found that once I retired. Now, I had owned small businesses before. I had managed some businesses. But I had been in that mindset once I had retired from the police department. It's like you got your head in the technical jargon. You forgot to write prose. So then I had to rethink myself and then go back to that, which fortunately I did. Then my husband opened up a printing company, and I was there helping him with it. And so you had to go back to thinking prose.
That is so true. I call it Fedhead, and I still say I'm a recovering CI officer. It took me a good 2 years to get Fedhead out of my brain and start writing and talking, you know, like a normal person again. And it was the case with From the Company of Shadows. I had to stop and say, cut it out. Stop sounding like a Fed and rewrite that. So I did that through the entire book.
Yeah, because when I would write something out, I'd go, at TPO. And my husband looked over my shoulder and goes, what's T/P/O/? I said, at time and place of occurrence. I'm going, oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no, I did it again.
Yeah, yep.
Now, not only do you talk about just your career, you talk about a lot of the stuff that's been going on. Say, for example, mm-hmm. what's going on between Russia, what's going on, Islamic terrorism and different organizations. And mm-hmm. I had to go back because you also spoke about the Muslim Brotherhood. And looking
right.
at today's occurrences, I went, excuse me, and last night I started going over through everything that's been going on lately. And mm-hmm. the big thing in the news is the Ukraine and Crimea. And
right.
looking at that, there are so many things that cross over, and you can't say
oh, yeah.
it's a coincidence. There's nothing in there that's a coincidence, but they're treating it as if everything just happens to be just happening.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, once again, the media, and they have a variety of reasons for doing this, from the sponsors who own the companies down to the bias of the journalists themselves, but they're trying, or either intentionally or unintentionally, to make Ukraine looked like a very simple thing of a thug president going in and trying to take away property, and it's much, much more complex than that.
That it is, that it is. And, you know, it's funny because I went back to some of the records, and back in February 10th of this year, Lieutenant Colonel Ralph Peters, retired, had actually predicted that this was going to happen. He
That's
actually
right.
predicted that Putin was going to stomp down in the Ukraine. And this yep. was right about the same time Eric Snowden blew up.
Yep.
Now,
yeah, and Ralph Peters was right on target, too.
Now, Snowden right now blew everything open, so we have no idea what he knows. But meanwhile, Clapper goes before Congress and said, you know, we didn't miss anything on the intel. Is this
well,
the problem?
Well, this is the shocking part. Our top government officials, Hillary Clinton, Eric Holder, James Clapper, and on and on and on, have been lying to Congress and the American people under oath. And Clapper originally said, no, no, we're not collecting data, the NSA isn't, on American citizens. And it turns out, indeed, because of what Snowden revealed, they are. He was lying under oath. Holder lied about Fast and Furious. Hillary Clinton lied about not seeing the cables from Ambassador Stevens in the Tripoli embassy. And on and on and on, these people are lying to the American people, the people that pay their salaries. And it has, all the way down to the IRS, it has gotten so out of control that it is almost commonplace during a Senate or congressional hearing for these officials just to directly lie under oath, which is a serious breach of the law, but they're doing it with impunity. And none of them are getting in trouble or being held accountable for it.
Now, last I knew, if I remember my CPL, criminal procedure law for people, perjury is a felony.
Yes, it is.
And when you do it on the federal level, it raises the gravitas, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You're talking about years in jail. And Annie, that begs the question, especially with Benghazi and the IRS for that matter, but with Benghazi, knowing the penalties for perjury under oath, why would all these Obama administration officials take the risk and lie under oath about these things if there was not something very, very serious that they did not want to come out?
That's very true. Do you know that they've got that new Geico commercial out there about Pinocchio not being a good motivational speaker? Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Well, he goes, and you have potential. And the more he pointed at this one guy saying you have potential, the longer his nose went. I'd like to take that commercial and dub it over and saying, Geico says Pinocchio would not make a good Obama government official.
You're darn right.
Yeah, and it's funny because just this past week, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, you know, turned around and he said that we knew about the military action that Putin was planning. We knew about
mm-hmm.
it before he even went in. Meanwhile, Clapper says, well, we didn't see anything in the intel.
Mm-hmm.
It just blows my mind.
It is mind-blowing. I mean, come on, goodness gracious. It was so obvious. And look at Ralph Peters, right on target, Ralph. And you're telling me that the most powerful and well-funded intelligence organization in the world, the Director of National Intelligence in the United States, you're telling me he didn't have the intelligence or they didn't know? They're either incredibly incompetent, or they're just flat out spinning yarns.
Or stupid. But
even more scary.
I want to let people know that the call-in line is open if they want to call it. It's 917-889-3675. And I see our friend Sue is there up in the call-in room. And just want to say, but hi, Sue, would you like to make a comment?
No, I'm just enjoying listening to the show today. Thank you, Annie.
Good. Thank you, Sue. We always have a lot of good people that call in, and some of them listen going into the chat room or on the internet, or they're just calling in the phone, so we never know how many people are listening in, which is fun. And I forgot to mention that we are being broadcast up on teapartycommunity.com. If anyone is pissed off with Facebook and tired of their restrictions and all the gobbledygook that they do, dump Facebook, go over to teaparty.com. You get like-minded conservatives and Tea Party patriots and Republicans. So go to teaparty.com and tell Tim Sr. and Tim Jr. I sent you over there.
Yes, and Annie, I would. I'm sorry to interject there. I would recommend them highly. Eject Facebook for a variety of reasons, including the fact that it's being monitored, and go over to the Tea Party Net, because not only is it protected, you can talk quite freely, but it's got a whole lot more integrity, and you'll find that there are thousands and thousands of like-minded people concerned about the Constitution that are getting on and becoming a part of that site. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, when I went on there, they were just under 100,000, and that was less than a year ago. They are now nearing 105,000 members, and
awesome.
This is just the word of mouth. Not a lot of people know about it. So we only mention it on, like-minded shows, but it's teapartycommunity.com. We're also being broadcast simultaneously on Kinetic Hi-Fi out of Charleston. So to all the listeners out there in Kinetic Hi-Fi, going from the Grand Strand up on Horry County, Myrtle Beach, all the way down to Savannah, we give a good shout-out to our fellow South Carolinians. Going back to the Ukraine, not a lot of people really understand the history of the Ukraine. There's basically two different Ukraines. There's the Russian one that's been with them for centuries. That Brezhnev gave them in 1954. Do I have the right person? Okay.
Yeah.
And then you have the rest of the Ukraine, which is the ethnic Ukrainians. And when this whole issue came forward with the Putin flexing his muscles, my husband happens to be Latvian, and the first thing that looked at each other and went, oh my God, he's going to go for Ukraine, and the next he's going to come up for the Baltic states, because they were the first ones to break away back in, I believe it was 1991, and the Ukraine was 91, I believe. Georgia was after that. Poland was the first, Czechoslovakia, and then I'm trying to remember the order it went in. And his family, he was born in a displaced persons camp, right after World War II, so that's how ethnic he is. And when he was free, I don't remember if you heard the stories, but in the city of Riga, they actually went into the cemetery and started digging up the Russian bodies to ship out.
Goodness.
So I'm surprised I haven't heard that or seen that yet going on in the Crimea or in the rest of the Ukraine, that ethnic, Russians versus...
Oh, God forbid, because I was in Bosnia when that was ethnic cleansing was going on there, and I think it's one of the most horrible things I've ever seen. God forbid that Putin goes. What Putin is doing is he's testing this president we have now, and just taking another step forward to see what he's going to do. He knows Barack Obama. It's pretty obvious. Obama's not going to do anything. And in some cases, he can't. Some of the Pentagon, there's a lot of folks like Dick Cheney and others out there rattling sabers and talking about military action. That would be the biggest mistake the United States could make. But Putin knows that Obama is a weak leader. He's known amongst the world as a weak leader. And Putin is, to use a loose analogy, I suppose, he's playing with him like a kitten with a mouse. He knows he doesn't have the political experience or the backbone to stand up against Vladimir Putin. So Putin's just taking one step at a time and pushing the chess piece just a little farther, and he's going to keep doing that until he thinks there's a threat to either his economy or his security. Until that time comes, he's going to keep taking more and more and more territory.
That is absolutely true. Now, he's right now he's got the Crimea. You know, hands down,
right.
We know he's got it. You know,
an important port, yes.
Yeah, that is. Just like Latvia, the Port of Riga is the most important port in the Baltic Sea. So you have one to the south, which would be in Crimea, and then you would have one on the Baltic Sea. So you have both the north and the south covered. And all you have to worry about is what's in the east. They've already, I'm sorry, the west. They already have the east.
Mm-hmm.
So he basically could actually box in all of Europe. He's boxed them in with the natural gas.
Yes, and the big question is, unanswered question, I think, is why. What is he up to? Is he trying to start a new USSR or Soviet Republic? If that's what he's trying to do, if so, we all are in a seriously bad situation. Or is he just trying to expand and protect Russianism, I guess if you want to call it that, and protect the integrity of the Russians? And he's listening to the Russians in Crimea. He's got a whole other thing he's dealing with, and there is a very large radical Islamic population in Chechnya, in Ukraine, and other parts of Russia that have been burning down Christian churches, killing several Christians. And believe it or not, Putin considers himself a Christian. So in his own kind of single-handed mind, he's protecting the ethnic Russians and the Christians at the same time and trying to quell this Islamic uprising that he's got, and there are factions of that in the Ukraine, so he's dealing with that at the same time, but I think he's protecting Russian ethnicity, and I don't think, and this is just my personal humble opinion, I don't think he's going after establishing a new USSR and pushing us to the brink of a military conflict. I think it's going to come to a point where he's just going to get what he wants and then he's going to stop.
Now we've got Joe Goldner, who's in the chat room. He actually ran for Congress against Debbie Wasserman Schultz in the last election cycle, and he said,
all right.
what we really need to do is get rid of Obama and the Democrats. That said, there is a primary election, I believe, going on in Florida right now. And there's a guy running, David Jolly, against this guy named Sink. So he's encouraging everyone. Joe, put that district back up in the chat room if you can. The districts in Florida, if they have a primary or election poll open, get out there and let's get the right government officials that have some backbone back in office.
You bet.
One of the things, you know, I was looking at, you know, looking at the situation, our best hope right now is that everything stays stable, and then the Western Ukraine, which is a land of, you know, mostly farmers and Catholics, keep looking towards Europe and then join with the European bloc, along with the Poland, Slovakia, Czech Republic. The eastern end would then be closer to Russia because they're mostly industrial and mostly Orthodox, and they look towards Moscow historically. You know, the best scenario I can see at this point. Do you see anything different?
No, I agree. And that one of the main problems is, although a lot of the dissenters want to go with the European Union is doing nothing. They're not offering any resistance to Putin. They haven't, although Putin's given billions of dollars to Ukraine, initially promised to give billions of dollars to Ukraine until this happened. The EU hasn't ponied up any money whatsoever. They haven't made any promises of coming in to stop the situation and helping. So they're, you know, they've got some pretty severe economic problems of their own, so they're just sitting there quietly doing nothing, and that's a huge part of the problem.
It is. You know, but the European Union is so afraid that if he turns off that gas tap, you know, we're still in the winter. And they still need this gas to run their industries. They still need it to keep their country. And Bigfoot says, you know, ease the permit process for liquefied natural gas exports. Right now, we are exporting more natural gas. We used to be a huge importer. Now we're exporting more than, you know, we import. So that's a good thing. But K.T. McFarland had a piece in Fox News, and she addresses that about there's a problem with us exporting natural gas. They have a connection called an LNG, and that's what we have to get more of those connections so we can export more to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that we have to do. But we'll go into K.T. McFarland later.
Yes, and wake up, America, and start thinking really seriously about the Alaskan pipeline and quit all this political meandering, and there's a prime example of why we need that thing, and Obama, and this is what politicians now and the current government do. Obama's dragging his feet on making a decision on the Alaska pipeline, because by dragging their feet in all the committees in the Congress and the Senate, dragging your feet means that's like it's called, one author's called it a toll booth. That's like saying, you give us more money, just keep, and we're going to stall this, and you give us more money, and then we'll think about signing off on this bill or taking it to a vote. It's a kind of, put in a very good book, it's kind of extortion. So Obama's just dragging his feet on this pipeline, not letting anybody know what he's going to do. He's got all these lobbyists dumping and corporations dumping all kinds of money in there at the expense, really, and this is a good example, at the expense of our own national security.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, it's no coincidence that Putin made his move in Crimea right after Hagel announced cutting back our military to pre-World War II standards.
Yeah.
That is no coincidence. It's absolutely no coincidence this happened immediately after the Sochi Olympics.
No, Putin is has a, perhaps, for lack of a better word, a Mussolini-like side to him, but he is an extremely intelligent strategist, and that's where Obama has kind of fallen off the boat. I think that, and maybe even the DNI and the intelligence community, they didn't, I think Robert Gates, I think, knew, but the intelligence community and the president failed to realize what a brilliant strategist, albeit a nefarious one, that Putin is. And he's had all this plan. Ralph Peters will tell you, as you and I were talking about, he's had all this plan for some time. The evidence has been there for some time, and he was just waiting for what he knew was coming as the perfect time to move, and that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, you have to think, the number one point is location, 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 where Crimea sits. Number two, 2008, they went into Georgia, and they still have troops over there. They remain, even though there's a peace accord over there. They went into Moldova, and they still have a few thousand troops over there, right? You think Georgia is over. You think Moldova is over. No, it still has Russian presence there.
Right.
Go back to the 1700s where they had their port there. Well, the naval base, the lease doesn't end until 2042. So they can lease and say, hey, we have the right to be there. You know, there's so many things that go on. So you have this going on. You throw in Snowden. You throw in the Olympics. You throw in Ukraine protests because of the Olympics. You throw in the Chechen rebels that are in the Ukraine. And you have every excuse for him to go in there. And then you throw in the ethnic issue, which is, heck. You know, in Europe, you go to any European country, and if you say, I'm German, I'm not going to marry another German, your neighbors are looking at you going, excuse me? I mean, I faced marrying into a Latvian family. I had some of his family members and friends going, she's not good enough for you. She's not Latvian. I'm like, excuse me? And they don't understand the European mentality. There is a huge ethnic pride.
Right.
And
that's part of the volatility of, and you hit it right on the head. Like you were saying at the beginning of the interview, this is more complex than you're seeing on the media, and you just covered all the points that are, it's almost like the perfect storm that Putin is exploiting. All these things are happening at one time to his favor and to the United States, our national security, even our disfavor, and the EU itself.
What they are not throwing in, which we will throw in, is the issues in the Middle East and other areas. You know, you've got the teeth in backwards. Assad's regime, you know, would lose meaningful Russian logistics if the Crimean goes west. So they need Crimea to remain with Russia. So Assad in Syria benefits. Same thing with Iran. You know, they will emerge weaker unless Iran can rely on Russia. So you've got two major Middle East powers. Now, Iran, nuclear weapon. Iran, nuclear weapon. North Korea, nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
Who got their technology for their nuclear weapons? Iran got it from North Korea. Where did Korea get it from? China and Russia. And so you've got huge loop.
That's exactly right. You had this Pakistani nuclear scientist who decided he was going to spill all the nuclear secrets over to North Korea, and they have got the plans.
They do. And this even goes to Venezuela and as far as out to the Pacific. you know, China wants to take back a lot of territory that is being held by Japan. You know, they've got those islands they've been battling over since the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
It all goes hand in hand, and it centers all back. The eye of the storm is Putin.
Yeah, that's correct. And here we have a weakened U.S. When all this is happening and this thing, this cauldron is brewing, we've got the good old administration here gutting and cutting back, and I get a lot of correspondence from generals and the cutbacks in the military and the firings of all these generals that are not politically correct. We're drawing down our military to alarming levels, and at the same time, Putin and others in China, they're expanding the strength of their arm while we decrease. And if that continues, and if he continues on the path he's on, and China does, and we continue declining, God forbid that there'll come a point when they can just push us around any way they want.
Yeah. Now, just before we went on the air, my husband and I was walking through the living room, and he was pointing to something on the TV about GM. And, of course, we went and did that humongous bailout for GM, at which the tax lost money. They sold the stock at a loss, so we lost.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose we got our money back. Amen. That's one of the most tremendous lies. And I'm looking at it, start screaming at the TV. They're talking about these recalls, all these GM cars recalls. And of course, I use some colorful language. And of course, you blank blank idiots. Of course, these cars are being recalled. Does anyone realize that GM produces 7 out of 10 cars in China now?
Yeah. Yeah, goodbye American jobs.
Anyone realize how many jobs have here in the United States and got shipped over to China? They have opened up 2,700 new car dealerships. How many closed when they did the bailout? I think about that same number, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
American dealerships closed.
And what people may not realize, that is a national security issue. Our economy is one of the, and one of the Joint Chiefs of Staff members called it, the biggest threat to our national security right now is the decline of our economy. And yet this sort of thing continues to go on, and it just gets weaker and weaker. So this is serious stuff.
Yeah. And then when you look at who the GM is partnership, they're partnering with government. And they have these nice little acronyms and nice little names for it. It makes it sound like it's a private corporation. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's government officials. It's the government itself that bought into it. And they're making a hefty profit off of the American back. And then if you look at the map of the United States and how many little communist red flags from China are now planted in the United States, how many businesses they're buying, and not just ordinary business, not like a mom and pop or a hotel, they're buying businesses that service our government contracts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, they know what they're doing. They're not stupid. They're very savvy, and they know what they're doing.
Oh, man. I just shake my head, and it's like, how do I get my head around this? I don't think I could ever have worked for the CIA. I think I would have exploded.
Well, you know, there are times writing about that, and I'm working on a second book about the constitutional crisis in America and the market of almost mafia-like money that flows under the surface in Congress and Senate, which is almost nauseating. There are times when I have to stop and take a walk. It's like you feel like you need to take a shower or something. It's so disgusting, and it's so huge, and there's so much corruption going on. You know, every now and then you got to take a break and ask yourself, you know, what the heck can we do? And that's part of what we talk about in some of the seminars we do. This is what we can do. One of the greatest things, Annie, is what you're doing now is we have lost freedom of the press in the United States. The fourth arm of government is gone. It's now on the side, the tyrannical side, and bought and paid for. So we've lost the freedom of the press, and I think probably most of your listeners, I know the Tea Party groups that I lecture to, realize this. We have lost freedom of the press in the United States, so we got to get it back. And the way we're going to do it is through shows like yours and others where we're getting the truth out to people, one person at a time, 1,000 people at a time, and so that we've got, and this is already happening, a massive millions of people, grassroots movement out there right now in the United States that are listening to programs like yours and others, and there is a movement brewing of the new freedom of the press, and the truth is getting out there, and people are starting to listen. But that's what we have to do, because we've lost the constitutional aspect of our country, amongst others. And that's why I lecture to the Tea Party so much, as I consider the Tea Party as one of the last and only hopes for this country.
Man, if you ever come to South Carolina, you got to look me up. We don't have a budget, so we can't offer you anything. Yeah, a handshake, a meal, and a couple of
good
drinks.
Cup of coffee will, good cup of coffee will do it. Strong.
No, because we had a problem with our leadership. You know, there was a little bit of a hiatus, a little bit of a low, and, of course, everyone started going a little way for family and health or whatever. So it was up to me last year to try to reconstitute, which I've been battling. And we've been making headway slowly, and each meeting we get more and more people, so it's buoying me. And we've got a huge senatorial race going on here in South Carolina, and we're all going after Lindsey Graham. Matter of fact, he's going to be downtown on Friday, so I may be calling for bail money on Friday afternoon. Because I RSVP'd, and I have, which is up on my website. So anyone wants one, they can go to southernsense.webs.com, go into the cafe shop, and they can order themselves their Dump Lindsey Graham merchandise.
You all and a lot of Tea Party members, in my view, are the heroes of our time, really. And if I may just interject this, the Tea Party, after the IRS targetings, a lot of Tea Party members fell away because they were afraid. And some of them had some business things that they wanted to keep private, and they fell away. And the Tea Party started for just a little while they're weakening. It's getting strong again. But what people have got to remember and not forget, first, I'd recommend you go back and you read the sacrifices that the Founding Fathers made when they built this country. They lost their house. They lost their farm. Some of them were thrown in jail. A couple of them were executed. Americans today, usually the best of Americans, they are so busy trying to survive and provide for their family, they're afraid to make any sort of sacrifice and risk. Well, those days are over. I guess when I wrote this book, I knew – I don't know if you remember the cartoon Super Chicken, but what he used to say is you knew the job was dangerous when you took it. So it is time to stand. It is time for peaceful, civil disobedience amongst people who are willing to pay the price, and there's got to be sacrifice. Otherwise, we will lose this country.
Now, that's the truth. I mean, we've become so sedate, so lazy, so comfortable, and I think that's where we as conservatives got ourselves into trouble. We were so busy worrying about our job, our family, making everything okay. You just want to go on your merry own little way and not make any waves. And that's where we went wrong. We were the silent majority. Exactly. We can't be silent any longer.
Bullseye, exactly.
So I'll be out there Friday, and I'll have like a jacket over my Lindsey Graham T-shirt. I've got my Dump Lindsey Graham, bright yellow, so you can't miss it. And I'm going to try to get a picture of myself standing next to Lindsey Graham with the T-shirt on. I don't know if others will see, but I'm going to try.
Well, if you need bail, just send us a note or give us a call, and we'll get some people together and help you out.
Well, listen, if I can get quoted in Al Jazeera and Politico, you know, I think I could, and I handled that, and I turned around, and the guy from Al Jazeera goes, "Well, you sure you want me to print your name?" I said, "I don't care if you put a fatwa out on me. Go for it."
The Islamic Society of North America has followed me around, and I got some other groups too. So, that's just part of the turf, and we got to stand up. A lot of people are afraid of the lawsuits. They're doing lawfare now, and they're trying to sue everybody left and right. Not just some sectors of the progressive movement, but a lot of the Muslim Brotherhood supported movements like the ISNA and CARE are starting to sue everybody they possibly can in what some people call lawfare, and that scared a lot of people away. We just can't be afraid of that stuff. That's how they're winning. The old phrase, go ahead, make my day. That's what's going to win, is having that kind of courage, because in the file analysis, if we stand up in droves like that, they're going to back down.
From your lips to God's ears. And that's the other thing, people getting back to religion. You mention anything about religion and they crumble. I see that sometimes, for a while I fell away from the church. I didn't fall away from faith. I just was one of those that just plodded along, happy to get along. And, I was like, all right, no, I'm not going to push. Someone doesn't want to acknowledge, I'm just not going to say anything. But now I'm saying, the heck with it. I'm going to wear my religion on my sleeve. I'm not going to shove it in your face, but I'm not going to be afraid to say thank you and God bless.
Anne, you're so right, and that is so important, and pastors need to stop hiding behind their pulpits. You remember the original writings. We have all been endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. The goal of the progressive movement is to eliminate religion and religious freedom in this country, make religious people look like a bunch of stupid fanatics because they throw science around, calling the Bible a myth when that science is full of holes. I give a lecture on that. But people buy it lock, stock, and barrel. What the progressive movement wants to do is eliminate religion from our society, because when they do that, they eliminate the very foundation of the Constitution itself and all the writings of the Founding Fathers. Once that is done, they can take over.
That's true. And you got to remember, our country is also founded by the help of the Black Robed Army. And very few
right.
people know what that is.
Yes, and what they're doing, and it's typical. I saw this in the CIA when it started becoming dumbed down, and the progressive movement is doing it, and a large part of the progressive movement is doing this very successfully, is they're dividing us, which is what they want to do. They want to divide us along racial lines. They want to divide us along ethnic lines. And they're working very hard to do that so that if the American people of all races and all ethnic backgrounds and all religions got together for the sake of the Constitution, because it is the most powerful government document ever written in the history of mankind, and I for lack of a better word, preach this wherever I go, please. Caucasian Americans, African American Americans, especially college age, the young people, you get them fired up and they're unstoppable. But the progressive movement is trying to divide those groups because they know until they get together, it's going to be slow progress. But once we do, and that includes the Tea Party, working to get rid of that lying reputation that the progressives have tried to stick on the Tea Party, getting that kind of membership into the Tea Party, the thing would explode. And we have got to stop their movement to divide Americans along religious and racial lines, because they're doing that intentionally. And that's something we as religious people and Tea Party members need to work to stop. And we have to do that if we're going to succeed.
Right. And we used to teach that the United States was a melting pot. Now it's all, everything is multiculturalism. And that's what I fight. I says, no. This is the United States of America. If you wanted to be, you know, in an area that's all Hispanic, or you want something that's, you know, all Asian, then, you know, I'll tell you what. I can tell you certain neighborhoods you can move into and you'll be comfortable. But I'll tell you, you'd be better off going to XYZ country, because then they have the progressive mentality that you want, and they have the ethnic background, and they celebrate the holidays you want. Here, we celebrate American holidays. We will respect your ethnicity. And we will enjoy your culture. So if I want Italian, I'll go to Little Italy. If I want Chinese, I'll go to, you know, Little China. Hey, just respect the way we were set this nation up. We got a caller coming in. Let me bring in Thomas. Thomas, good afternoon. Welcome aboard.
Hey, Annie. I was listening online. Excuse me. Kevin, I loved what you just said. And it's
Hi,
kind
Thomas.
Of a... You're welcome. It's kind of a perfect segue to an event that I'm working on, and it's funny that you mentioned that. Just give you a little quick history of my background. I am the Missouri chapter president for the Frederick Douglass Foundation, which I like to proudly say we are the largest Christ-centered, multi-ethnic Republican ministry in the United States. We are founded on the principles of the Word of God, first and foremost, the principles of family, marriage between one man and one woman, and the sanctity of life. And in June, we have here, well, I'm not in Missouri, back. I'm actually chilling in the nice state of Florida at the moment. But
that's where I am.
Oh, wow. I'm over here in Bradenton, actually. We have coming up in June official launch event for the Frederick Douglass Foundation of Missouri. We are actually in our third year, but I've never done anything, you know, and to officially announce. But in this day and age, with everything that was going on, I got sick and tired of hearing conservatives say, well, you know, we can't reach a certain demographic of people because we're not black, or this, and this. And so...
Right.
This event, it's about this. This is what this is about. It is time that we as conservatives understand and realize that We don't need to be the same person, the same color as the person to reach out to those people groups. Because if we are walking on the foundations of the Word of God, Jesus Christ reached all people. So why is it that we have to allow ourselves to be pushed away from the principles of the Word of God to be able to work with people? Why is it that we are allowing the party, our own party, which, by the way, Annie, I don't know if you all knew that March 20th is the 160th anniversary of the founding of the original Republican Party, the party founded on freedom and life, dedicated to freeing the slaves. That's the legacy of this party. Why don't we go back to the foundation on which we were founded? This party was founded, and I'm telling you, we will kick the progressives from here to eternity. But we have to remember our principles, knowing that God, the Constitution, is founded on the Bible, not the other way around. And sometimes I have to remind some conservatives, you know, folks, the Constitution is not the supreme law of the land. It's the Word of God. So we just have to remember who we are. And if we're confident in our message, we will win. So that's what I have to say. And just, I love your message, Kevin, and keep it up.
Well, thank you, Thomas, and great job. You're absolutely right. We need to be bold because we are on the right side. We stand for the Constitution, which is based, without a question, on the Bible, and it's based on freedom to all mankind and the unity of all mankind, of all races and all ethnic backgrounds, and that's what they're trying to destroy because they know that they can destroy the Constitution itself. And we need to step forward like we do in some of our seminars and say, not my country, you don't. Oh, no, no, no. You are not going to take my country away from me and away from us and away from all the races that get together, ethnic groups, religious groups, and stand for the Constitution of the United States and the moral principles behind it.
Right.
Absolutely right. Thomas, you are so correct. You know, the moral principles have to come back. We have to turn around and say, you know, used to be a time you used to say please and thank you. Used to be a time you held the door for someone, you know, that was coming in right behind you. Let's get back to being polite to each other. And I think we can stop a lot of the BS. You know, bring people back to church. If someone goes to school and sits down and reads the Bible, don't take it away from them. Congratulate them for being someone that wants to sit there and read, and congratulate them being someone who wants to learn, someone who wants to learn more about their religion, you know, and what's wrong with that? What is wrong with
that? Yes, and be on guard, too, because in some Harvard and some of our main universities, they're teaching that the Bible is a myth. And if you study the Bible, even in the light of science, you will find that it has more science behind it than some of the science they're teaching in these colleges and universities. And some Christians especially shrink back and say, well, you know, we really don't have much science behind the Bible. Oh, yes, we do. There's more evidence for a cataclysmic global flood than there is for a dog laying on the ground and turning into a piece of rock over 4 million years. So we don't have to be shy about that the Bible is one of the most incredible documents, if not the ever written, from one cover to the other, backed up by archaeology and all kinds of other historical and scientific evidence. We don't have to be shy about that. But see, that's what they've done, is they've driven religious people back into a corner where they're actually embarrassed and pastors are hiding behind their pulpits. And as long as people do that, the progressive movement will just get bigger and bigger and bigger. But the time, it has come to stop that.
You know, one of the things I did to someone once, and I loved it, I happened to have been in the library, and they were saying something about the Bible being full of myths. And I said, wait a minute, 1 minute. And I went and I had the librarian help me pull this up, and I found two National Geographics I remember reading years ago. One was where they found the actual Noah's Ark on the side of Mount Ararat in Turkey.
Yep.
And the other one is where they did an extensive piece on tracing the journeys of Abraham, which led to the rise of the monolithic belief in one God and Judaism, and eventually to Christ and then Muhammad. And I says, wait a minute, this is National Geographic. Do you trust what they say? And you watch the person very slowly turn red in the face and walk away. It's like, yeah, no, the facts don't lie. I'm mean.
People don't People don't know the facts because they're not being taught the facts. And, you know, you've got the whole intelligent design, creation versus evolution debate going on. And all you have to do is raise the science that is all through the Bible. And it's actually quite fascinating. And when you start getting into the science, for example, behind the Noahic flood, the only way a fossil can be formed is if that organism is killed instantly by some cataclysmic event like a gigantic flood or volcanic activity. Sediment has to be laid down over it immediately for what's called lithification to happen. The matrix of minerals takes the place of the bones. That's how fossilization occurs. The best explanation is a global flood. What the folks who say the Bible is a myth will try to purport, and they're doing this in schools because they're not challenged, is, well, fossils happen when a dog dies and lays on top of the ground, and you just throw in a million or maybe if you have to, a billion years, and that's how it happened. Well, science doesn't support that. Anyway, they're trying to make the foundation of this country look like a myth in some of our top universities. That's got to be challenged. They're the ones that should be embarrassed because they're the ones that don't have the science behind them. We just have to, like you were saying, Thomas, we need to get bold with the facts and with the truth, and just another one of the facets of how we're going to take this country back.
Yeah, actually, we have to take on the atheists, too, because you've got this huge atheist movement. You've got the course at the World Trade Center Museum, and you got an atheist fighting it because he said it gives him a headache. Well, here's the answer, and leave me alone.
I heard that. You know, it would be funny if it wasn't so sad and ridiculous. You know, Charles Darwin never knew about a single human cell. Had he known about that, he probably would have rethought his theory in terms of its simplicity. But it pretty much comes down to that, the incredible complexity of life, all of which, in the case of a cell, has to happen exactly, and DNA has to happen exactly at the same time. Every enzyme has got to be perfectly in place, all functioning at the same time, and you come out with this incredibly complex organism. Now, if we say that to people, and I've done that, I did that in the CIA, and you know, some people in the CIA think they're at the top of the evolutionary heap. And when you lay this on people that don't know, they scratch their head and go, geez, I never heard that before. Well, like you were saying before, Annie, we need to come out and just gracefully educate people that you're not really getting the full story. But and that sounds like we're getting off on a religious discussion, and maybe to an extent we are. But the important point is our country is founded on that stuff. Our freedom is founded on that stuff.
Right.
As Ronald Reagan said, we were, or I wish I could still say we are, we're a city, a light on a hill. That's what America used to be because of where it came from and the heritage of the Bible and the writings of the founding fathers. We were a moral country, and we were looked at as the good country in the world. Well, now that's eroding, and it's eroding rapidly, and our freedom will erode with it because that is where our freedom comes from, is that basic belief. I think it was Thomas Jefferson said, a free society cannot function apart from a belief in the Bible. There's got to be moral constraints on a free society, or it'll turn to anarchy.
Right.
No. Looking at this conversation, the way we have it, is that I'm going to have to remember, Kevin, to send you a copy of the book that my last guest had written, Manipulism. He's from Denmark, and he was talking about how he woke up to the way the collective society was manipulating him.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring on the next guest, and we've got Kel. Good afternoon, Kel. She's a fellow BTR host. Hello?
Hi, Annie. Thank you so very much for taking my call. It's an honor, and it's especially an honor to speak with you, Mr. Shipp. Kevin Shipp, you are a wonderful man. I am very much enjoying this program. You were bringing up the Tea Party issue a little while back, and I was wondering if you have any thoughts about a proposal by Wild Bill for America in that we establish team tea parties, and that would be small groups of people that get together locally and work as a collective and get things going on a national level. They, for example, just get your neighbors together, get your friends together, have a little coffee clutch in your kitchen on a Saturday afternoon and discuss the issues, what's going on, and then formulate and get your demonstrations together, have like a static rally as the Tea Party does anyway. and just make more connections. Get the word out. It's kind of like that old shampoo commercial and so on and so on and so on. And so, Kevin, I was wondering if you had any thoughts about that.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Most great movements, especially in the United States, have happened exactly that way, where groups get together and they meet in each other's houses. They meet on the community level. They have city, county, and state tea parties. They network together. Networking at the grassroots level is absolutely huge, and I think I agree with you. I think that's the answer.
Yeah, well, I got to mention that just for a second, Kel. I know we're coming down to 3:30, and people are accustomed to us cutting off at 3:30. On Connecticut 5, they will lose us at 3:30, but we're going to go on just a little bit longer because Kevin is so fascinating, and I don't want to cut off the conversation ahead of time. I hope you don't mind, Kevin.
Absolutely. I just wanted to call in and ask that question. Oh, Annie, this show is just fascinating. I'm really enjoying myself listening to it, as I always do. But I really am passionate about the Tea Party movement in the United States, very much passionate. And I should disclose that I'm actually a Canadian in Canada. But I have such a passion for American politics, my American cousins, and that as what happens to the United States, thus happens to the rest of us. And what I'm seeing in the Obama administration is just breaking my heart. And so I try my level best to ensure that the people of the United States of America know that they are loved globally.
Good for you. Thank you. We need you. You're another one of those heroes that's out there.
Yeah, Kel has a fantastic show that she and her partners run. So, Kel, if you want, put up in the chat room the link to your show and let people know when you're going to be on. I appreciate it.
I absolutely will. I'm all over the place. I'm kind of like the Scarlet Pimpernel. They seek her here, they seek her there, they seek her everywhere because I'm all over the place. But, Annie, thank you so very much for taking my call. And, Kevin, I'm looking very much forward to reading your book.
Well, thank you.
You bet. Right, have a great afternoon.
Anyone that missed it earlier before, Kevin said he would have a personally signed at a discounted Tea Party price his book. If you contact me directly, if you go into my email, you can get me at Southern Sense. I'm putting it up in the chat room, southernsense@hotmail.com. And you could also get me through my website, which is www.southernsense, if I get my fingers to do the right thing, .webs.com. So, Kevin, we're having a blast here. So what's
next? Yeah, we sure are. Yeah, I'm enjoying it.
You know, did you catch Mitch McConnell said he was going to level all the tea parties? He said, we're not going to be able to put up one solid candidate against his people.
Watch out, Mitch. I think he's in for a bit of trouble. Yeah. And they have every intention. There is a GOP political elite, political class, and they're part of this undercurrent of billions of dollars that goes back and forth, of which Mitch is a part. And they hate the Tea Party because the Tea Party really means democracies. So, yeah, you're right. He has said that. But I think he's kind of got a bit of a wake-up call coming.
Yeah, he goes into CPAC, and he's got this firearm in his hand going, not from my cold, dead hands type of thing. Yeah. He does this rousing speech, and it makes you think like he's a real conservative.
Yeah.
And he just gave Matt Bevins a huge boost.
McConnell, that was embarrassing, I thought, what he did and the way he played that and grabbing the firearm. It's like, Mitch, why don't you go back to Washington, D.C. and actually practice that?
I don't think he knew which end to fire at him.
Yeah, I don't think so. What I mean by practice is practice democracy, the democracy that he's the original Republican Party, what he's talking about. He is not doing that, nor is John Boehner or any of the others of them. They are not practicing that back in Washington. They are the GOP elite political class. They're getting rich by the minute, and they know it. They're putting legislation in there they have no intention of passing, so they get lobbyists dump more money into their PACs and their leadership PACs and all that other stuff. And like I alluded to before, I'm writing part of this into a book. I've been doing research, and the way the GOP has gotten up in Washington in that regard sometimes is so nauseating, I got to take a walk outside just to clear my head out. So go back to Washington, Mitch, and fasten your seatbelt, because Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and others, watch out, because just as Ronald Reagan did, you may try to shoot them down in the short run, but that kind of message is going to win in the long run.
Yeah, I loved it. Thomas has another question, but I'm going to make a point. I loved watching on the news the other night because Rand Paul won the straw poll, and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee came up as, you know, heavy Tea Party, where Rand Paul was, you know, one of these libertarian independent, and they were trying to play them against each other. And And I believe it was Ted Cruz that was on, and they were asking me about it. And he goes, you know, we don't always agree on everything, but you know what? We'll stand by each other no matter what. And the reporter had nothing else to ask. They were like, are you sure? No, there's no division here. You know, we are united in our message. He may look at it one way, I may look at it another, but we find our middle ground and we stand by each other and support each other. That's that.
That's right, and that's absolutely right. And they've already proven that too by their actions and their speeches. So yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. Now, Thomas, you had another question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I have actually. It's a two-part question. Well, two to see. My first question is, I was wanting you to, if you can confirm something for me, because unlike a lot of people in our nation, Kevin, I refuse to go through all the hand-wringing over the CIA or the NSA spy scandal, all that good stuff, and I'll tell you the reason why. Because and I know for a fact that there are still individuals within our CIA, our NSA, and our intelligence communities more so for than against us, who actually still are working to protect our interests. Can you confirm that, or is that something that you can't say?
Yeah, Thomas, no, that is true, and humbly, I was one of them. I found, and there are some good men and women, patriotic, God-fearing, country-loving people in the CIA and the NSA, and I worked with both, and I knew them. There's no doubt about that. They are, unfortunately, in the vast minority, and they all have been basically ordered to shut up. I'll give you a quick example. 1995, when I was in a CIA office space, we had a big meeting ordered by the director of the CIA. They took us into a conference room. My division chief apologized. He was just a messenger. He didn't necessarily agree with it. But the order came down from the director of the CIA that no one in CIA office space, and this was in 1995, no one in any CIA office space could ever say Merry Christmas, have a manger scene, or anything like that at all. And if they did that, they would receive disciplinary action. So this is back in 1995. So, yeah, there are people in there, but they're being silenced. I went home that night and thought, what am I going to do about this? And prayed about it, of course, and thought, there's only one thing to do about this in a constitutional society. I don't care how big they think they are. I went in humbly the next day. It was Christmas Eve. I turned around and I said, good night to you all, and by the way, Merry Christmas. Walked out and said, that's my line in the sand. You don't touch my Constitution, CIA or NSA or anybody else. You don't touch my freedom of speech. I'll be the best employee, and many of us were. I'll be the best and most loyal employee you'll ever have, but do not tread on my Constitution and the rights that it gives me, because the moment you do that is where we part ways.
Right. Yes. And my second question, just listening to you, Kevin, I would love to reach out to you and invite you to my event in June. So how could I contact you, like through email, or I could get that information from
Thomas. I'd like to know more about it. Send Annie a note based on the email that she gave you, and Annie will get in touch with me, and then I'll hook up with you and then find out more about your event.
Okay, I appreciate that. I got a loud guy in the back.
It's like you're in a restaurant.
Down we said hi.
All right. Anyone wants
Sorry
to know,
that.
Reach me through southernsense@hotmail.com or go into my website, southernsense.webs.com. And if you're in my website at southernsense.webs.com, check out the Dump Lindsey Graham merchandise. I was starting to say earlier, if I have enough people who buy the merchandise and I have enough money from that, I am taking out a full-page Lindsey Graham ad, anti-Lindsey Graham ad. So it's not money I'm putting in my pocket. It's money I'm putting back into the cause. So
good.
Check out
good.
The sense.webs.com. So, Kevin, I hope Excellent. You're going to get one of those T-shirts.
I'll get one, you bet, and I'll put it on. And maybe you can help bail me out. But we'll do it. And I'll wear it with great joy.
Well, Kevin, this has been an ever-loving blast, and I knew that we were going to be going over the time. You know, I had put together, let me see if I can pull it up, I had put together a little audio. I don't know if you heard or saw KT McFarland's item in Fox News. And she
I have a lot of respect for KT, yeah, but I didn't see that particular one, no.
All right, well, she had this thing where she imagined what the 90-minute phone call was between Obama and Putin.
Oh, and yeah.
So I took it and I actually recorded it just before we went on air. And it's 12 minutes. Would you be able to stay and listen?
Well, I'm flying blind here. I'm actually on my cell phone, so I don't have access right now, but I'll certainly check it out later.
Well, I was going to play it just now if you wanted to listen in.
Yeah, certainly, yeah.
Okay. This is KT McFarland, March 3rd, Fox News editorial she wrote, imagining Obama and Putin and their 90-minute phone call. And this was recorded just before we went on air, if I can get it to play. Come on, here we go. How Obama could stop Putin's Ukraine power grab without firing a shot. By KT McFarland, March 3rd, 2014, FoxNews.com. Narrated by Ann Ubellis, Southern Sense, Conservative Talk. Author's note. President Obama had a 90-minute phone call with President Putin Saturday after troops entered Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. No official transcript was released. Here's KT McFarland's take on what might have been said and what I hope Obama told President Russia. Obama, we condemn with the strongest possible words your invasion of the sovereign and independent state of Ukraine. If you do not withdraw immediately, there will be consequences. Nations don't invade other nations in the 21st century. The Cold War is over. You must understand your actions are not in Russia's best interest. Words are cheap, Mr. President. You and I both know you won't do a thing to stop me in Ukraine. Neither will anyone else. I've replaced you as the dominant foreign power in the Middle East. I've got a close and growing closer relationship with Iran, which will become the dominant local power in the Middle East. You didn't even notice it when I left the Olympics for a day to fly back to Moscow during Olympics to sign an arms agreement with Egypt's General Sisi. I'm creating Greater Russia and reclaiming lands we lost when the Soviet Union collapsed. And as for my place in history, winners write history, Mr. President, not whiners. Obama. Okay, Vladimir, you've had your chance. I realize now that not standing up to you in years past has only whetted your appetite for more aggression. So I'm reversing course. No more reset with Russia. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Now, let me tell you what I'm going to do from here on. I'm going to hit you where it hurts, crush your economy, and make your borders vulnerable. It won't happen right away. It will take a few years. But once the momentum starts, you won't be able to stop it. And I'm going to do it by taking a page from your playbook. You have rebuilt Russia by exporting your energy resources, oil for revenue, natural gas for political influence. I'm going to do the same to tear you down. First, I will reverse my decision to halt the missile shield in Poland and the Czech Republic. America will go ahead as originally planned and build the missile shield, but at an accelerated basis. That means U.S. military personnel will be working alongside Polish and Czech military to construct and operate the systems. The missile shield is designed to protect Europe from Iranian missiles, but you get the point. Uniformed U.S. military will soon be stationed near the Russian border. Second, I will reverse course on the defense budget. Your defense minister just announced Russia is negotiating basing rights in seven nations around the world. He also said you were rebuilding old Soviet-era military bases in Central Asia. Your parliament has just voted unanimously to invade Ukraine. In light of that, this is no time for my Secretary of Defense to announce we are gutting our military. Third, I will allow the Keystone Pipeline to go ahead, again, on an accelerated basis. That will not only give a boost to the American and Canadian economies, it will start driving down the price of oil. Fourth, I will give my wholehearted support for fracking and horizontal drilling. American energy companies will now develop the vast oil and gas resources that lie literally under our feet. We've seen the U.S. go from natural gas importers to exporters in less than 5 years, and the price of gas falling accordingly. We will now do the same with oil. Analysts expect the price of oil could decline by 20%. I don't have to tell you what that means for the Russian economy. Your economy and government are solely dependent on energy revenues. You need oil above $90 to meet payroll. It should settle well below that within a few years' time. And free markets are a great thing. They anticipate change and will start short selling now. That will make it difficult for you to pay for food imports, subsidies, your military buildup, and, of course, the extremely expensive Sochi Olympics. I will send a trade delegation to Poland and other countries in Central Europe to explore ways of helping them use fracking technologies to develop their own gas reserves. Chevron and Shell have already signed a $13 billion deal with Ukraine. I expect others to follow. At the same time, I will throw roadblocks in front of any American energy company that seeks to develop your eastern Siberian fields. Your existing oil fields in western Siberia have maybe a decade left. You need our technology to develop new ones. You're not getting it. Sixth, it's time we refocus on Western Europe's overdependence on Russian natural gas. We will explore ways to export our newfound natural gas surpluses to Europe by underwriting building of LNG terminals to accept imports from America. And while we're at it, we will reassure our NATO allies, especially those that used to be under Soviet control, that Article 5 of the NATO Charter is still valid. If you are setting your sights on them next, think again. It's all for one and one for all. Seventh, it's high time we expand our relations with the oil and gas-rich nations of Central Asia. We'll extend invitations to each of them to visit Washington, to see how America and American energy companies might work with them to build pipelines to get their energy exports to Europe and beyond, bypassing Russia. I will work my way down this list, announcing one new policy per week. It should take almost 2 months, culminating just before the G8 summit you're hosting in Sochi in June. The results of these actions, I'm sure you will appreciate, will your economy. That will feed the small but growing anti-Putin sentiment in Russia as you are forced to cut back on subsidies and benefits for your people. Your military will not be happy about the cuts you will have to make to their budgets. It will also breed political independence in the capitals of East and West Europe, since they will no longer need to import Russian gas to survive. The countries on your southern border will be cut loose from your grip, preferring their newfound relationships with America. Mr. President, you're a fine physical specimen of a man. You're strong and healthy. You no doubt want to rule Russia for another decade. But the future you face is very different from the one you imagined. So I'll offer you one last chance. We can have a different future, one that benefits us both. First, we will let American energy companies help you to develop oil and gas deposits in eastern Russia. Second, we will encourage Western investment to develop Russian industry outside the energy sector. You are desperate to diversify your economy. We have the technical expertise and capital to help you. Third, we have a common interest in fighting terrorism and radical Islam. We will be far more successful in our efforts if we do it together. Let's work together to keep the Middle East at peace. Fourth, we have a mutual understanding that the nations on your borderlands should not be a launching pad for aggression against you any more than the nations in the Western Hemisphere should be a launching pad against us. You can keep the Crimea as long as you allow Ukraine and other countries in the former Soviet Union to continue along their own paths of independent governance. If they seek to join a Russian economic union, fine. If they prefer to improve economic relations with the West, that's fine too. Finally, if nations of the former Soviet Union seek NATO membership, then we will offer NATO membership to you. We do not see NATO as an anti-Russian alliance, but a military and political alliance against aggression. Countries inside the NATO tent will not encroach upon each other. Countries outside the tent, be it in the Middle East or Asia, will meet a unified front should they try to do so. So, Mr. President, here are the two paths open to us. We can spend the next 10 years at each other's throats. If so, we will win in the end, because we can destroy you economically, just like we did in the 1980s and 90s when the Soviet Union collapsed. Or we can spend the next 10 years working in concert to the benefit of both our peoples and to the world. If so, we both win. The choice is yours. Don't answer me now. Take a day or two to think it over and call me, made a decision. But the deal isn't on the table forever. And knowing you take your public image seriously, if you do take the deal, I won't release a transcript of this phone call. If I don't hear from you within 3 days, I will release this transcript and start working my way down the list. One new initiative a week. Russians will know the looming economic disaster they face is thanks to you. And for added fun, I'm going to deny visas for any of your Oglethorpe cronies. They won't be spending their summer in the Hamptons this year. Oh, one more thing. Some say we should boycott the G8 summit you're hosting in Sochi in June. Or maybe kick you out of G8. Nope. I'd rather see you squirm in person. I'm coming. After implementing the steps I've outlined above, we will see who is smirking then. But I've got a question. Can we see the Crimean Peninsula from Sochi? Putin's response is undecipherable. Sadly, this is not the real transcript of the 90-minute Obama-Putin phone call. The real conversation probably consisted of Obama lecturing Putin about what was in Russia's best interests and Putin ignoring him, instead daydreaming about what was next on his expansionist agenda. President Obama prefers public speeches. President Putin prefers to let his actions speak for him. Obama talks, Putin walks. Written by KT McFarland, FoxNews.com. Wow.
That was beautiful.
I guess I should have been an actress.
that was a great piece.
I read it, and I just could hear her voice in my head, and I just hope I did her justice, because I looked everywhere, and I'm saying, Katie, tell me you did not record this. Hearing her from her voice would have been so much more powerful, but I said,
no, you did a super job.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I couldn't resist. I just could not resist. But she nails everything on the head, you know, everything that I had. Because when I came across it, it was after I did all my notes and everything. I put all my notes on the desk last night, and then I saw this last minute, and I said, I can't let this go. I can't let this go. Everything I looked at, she just bing, bang, boom.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Oh, man. But, of course, you hear the New Yorker coming out of my voice. Well, Kevin, what's up next?
We've got more speaking engagements, so we're going back up to Peachtree, Newman, Georgia. We've got a kind of a mixture of GOP and Tea Parties we're going to be talking to about the constitutional crisis up there. Looks like we're doing one in Atlanta. I'm doing a videotape spot in Benghazi, looks like around the 9th of April. So we got basically those are things that are coming up in the next couple of months.
Wow. And are you going to have those engagements up on your website?
We will, yes.
Okay. And your website, again, is kevinmship.com.
That's correct, yes.
All right. And people can find that link up on our show page. And I'm going to put it up one last time into our chat room, which is kevinmship.com. HIPP.com. So, Kevin, I thank you for staying longer. We went beyond our normal 90 minutes, and I appreciated you being a good sport.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Annie. I enjoyed it.
All right. I want to remind everyone, if they want your book, they can get it directly at your website or through Amazon. But if they want the Tea Party discount, they can go into my website, SouthernSense.com, and contact me or email me at SouthernSense@Hotmail.com, and Kevin will make sure he gets it to you at a discounted price.
You got it.
Thank you so very, very much, Kevin. You have a great day, and I'll be talking to you later.
Sounds good, Annie. Thank you.
Thank you. Man, I want to thank everyone for hanging in there, and of course, I got to bring on Sue one last time to say hello. Sue, did you enjoy the show? And Sue? I guess Sue fell asleep. But I want to thank Thomas for calling in and Kel for calling in, and I want to thank everyone for hanging out, the little bit of extra that we did. I hope you enjoyed the show. I hope you found it informative. And I'm trying to see who I got coming up. We've got another fantastic show coming up on Friday. Yes, Friday is our next show, and I just got to see who the heck I got. I have another radio host, and that is, last name is Morse. Let me see if I can remember his first name. Oh, right, Chuck Morse, and he's a syndicated radio talk show host. He'll be joining us on Friday. I'm hoping to have back the following Tuesday, Trevor Loudon. I'm waiting for a confirmation on that. But we do have next month coming in Lee Bright, and I also have, reconfirmed for April 15th, Dr. Waleed Ferez is going to be coming back and joining us. He's got a new book that is also out. So we have some great shows lined up, and hopefully we'll have our co-host, Cool Mike, coming back with us. So I want to thank everyone for joining us, and until Friday, I want to say good night, and God bless, and be back here safe at time, at station. Thank you for your choice. That's it.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
Stand up, let's make it loud, American.